League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
KFNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston, a Gao Media station.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. A quick word here for the Liberty Kitchen. Now, think of it as modern American comfort food. Their classics taken up several notches. They've got great burgers, mac and cheese, chicken fried steaks, mom's spaghetti chowder. It is farm stand crisp food that Liberty Kitchen stamps its claim on, and they own it. It's big flavor served at a neighborhood social. Got all kinds of great staples there. Obviously, the raw bar and oysters, Creole gumbo, oysters on the half shell, cowboy surfers, po' boys, chops, steaks, ribs, fish, signature cocktails, and the coldest of beer. Liberty Kitchen, lunch, supper, and brunch. Stop by Heights, River Oaks, Rice Village, Garden Oaks, and the Treehouse in Memorial City. So with that, we bring on Fox analyst, former Premier League defender at Newcastle. He is Warren Barton, a great friend of the show. Warren, thank you, as always, for coming on, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year, my friend.
Well, let's talk right away off the top today what was a really classic Premier League game, one that was just kept you on the edge of the seat. The 2-0 win for Spurs over Chelsea. How about a couple of quick comments and thoughts on that one?
Well, I think this is why, particularly myself, I love the EPL and still rate it as the best league in the world, because when you get a good one like this, it had everything. It had the action, had the goals, had the energy, the passion, the fans, the noise, and a bit of quality as well thrown into it. So I thought it was an excellent game. Great statement for Tottenham to beat Chelsea. Have been on a marvellous run, 13 games with that come unbeaten. Maybe a little bit of revenge from last season as well, that happened at Stamford Bridge. But I think Dele Alli showed his quality as a player with Gareth Southgate watching. Chelsea will be fine, they'll bounce back, and they'll be on one of their favourites, obviously, to win the EPL. But I just thought it was a classic. He had everything that you needed to watch the game.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Dele Alli and the youth of this Spurs team. Obviously, this is a kid, everybody's talking about him now as the face of the England national team. He's only 20 years of age, shows us he's got an aerial game today. He's got so many different elements to his game that makes him exciting. The one thing that jumps out to me, and I wonder if it jumps out to you, is the maturity of this kid.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that's from last season. I think he showed he's got an arrogant side to him, which I think all top players need. But he had a bit of a petulant side as well, where he would flick out and push people and get in people's faces. And although he's only a young man, he's played a lot of games. And he's learned his trade. He's had to go to lower leagues and different leagues to play and get that experience. And now he's come in and he times his runs a lot better now. He's not just such a box-to-box athlete. He can time his runs a little bit more difficult and times them better, which is harder for defenders to mark. And you think you're right. I think there is an air of expectation that he quite enjoys. And I think going forward, Phil Neville said it in the commentary, he's got a long way to go yet, but in that mould of a Frank Lampard and obviously a Steven Gerrard, that type of player that can take a game by the scruff and that can score goals, and he's got a good future ahead of him, but he's still got to keep learning. And I think he will do with all the players, and particularly the coach, Pochettino, who I speak to Brad Friedel all the time with Fox about him and how he is as a coach and how he may manage players and gets to know them on the training field but also off the field. And I think that's showing their season, learning from last season, and they'll be one of the favourites and in the running to win the title.
Does Pochettino, to you, have it all as a manager? I mean, you know, some managers are labelled as motivators, other tacticians. It seems he is both.
Yeah, I think he, again, speaking to Brad, he knows what he wants, and there's no diverting from that with the players. He understands the players. I think what he does really well, which is different to Pep or maybe Klopp, he just keeps quiet and throws a language thing. And sometimes silence is the best sign of intelligence, because people start worrying and thinking. He doesn't really get involved too much, but as Brad said to me, he knows exactly what he wants, how he wants his players to prepare and be ready for the game. And like he said, he wants his team to be competitive. And I think that's the physical side of the game, but also the tactical side of the game. And I think he does that very, very well. He's not the one that you hear screaming and shouting on the bench. And I think he does that very well. He's just a quiet, assuming guy and gets on with his business. And I think he is one of the, you know, top coaches there are in the world, let alone in the EPL.
Fox analyst Warren Barton joining us here, played for Newcastle in the Premier League in Northern England in that incredible hotbed of soccer. Back to Pochettino and what you just said. Isn't that an art for managers, though, sometimes to know when not to talk?
Yes, and I think he does it well. I think some that I've had coaches that speak too much, that go in the media and keep going on and on and on, and sometimes silence, and he can use that language barrier just to ease it off a little bit. But as I said, he knows that. But tactically, going through at the back today, matching up with Chelsea, not allowing to Hazard and Pedro to get into that little number 10 position where they can start running at the back four. He had the two holding midfield players. And again, he's had Harry Kane coming into form. He can occupy a back three. And what Harry Kane did very well, he always went on David Luiz. So as playing as a three at the back, Cahill and Azpilicueta had to tuck around a little bit, that left a little bit isolation on the wide areas for the fullbacks Walker and Rose to go one-on-one against two players that are not natural defenders, that want to go forward, particularly Moses on that right-hand side. So I think tactically he got it spot on. He asked them lots of questions and they couldn't answer it.
Were you talking about Dier and Wanyama?
Yes, yeah, I thought they was excellent, yeah. And I think when you have them type of players and Eriksen who got on the ball, I thought they was excellent. But the wide areas, Danny Rose and Walker, I thought they pinned their two wide players back because Moses wants to go forward and Pedro, when he slid out there in the second half, he wants to go forward, but they pushed the game to him. They got the goals at the right time, just before half-time and when Chelsea was having their best bit of spell. But I thought, you know, particularly Harry Kane, he can occupy David Luiz, and then it worries with the two wider players with Cahill and Azpilicueta. They have to tuck in a little bit. Then it allows a little bit more freedom in them wide areas.
Warren Barton joining us here on ESPN 97.5. Well, before we get to Christian Eriksen, who I thought was outstanding as well, let's just speak a little bit about, to me, about just, you know, the importance of the save that Hugo Lloris scored, I mean, yes, save made on Diego Costa, because, you know, the timeliness of goals, God, it's just like almost every game you can say the timeliness of goals are so important and the timeliness of saves. Chelsea comes out as absolutely throwing everything at what is a uncomfortable Spurs. Look a great bet to tie it up, and Lloris picks this Costa shot out of the corner.
Yeah, I mean, I always think goalkeepers on their saves, you know, maybe not necessarily on all their, but the big saves that they make, Petr Cech. And, you know, you're right, Len, with the goals. You know, look at Arsenal. They get that goal back at 3-1, and it just gives them a bit of belief, and then it puts a bit of uncertainty into Bournemouth's mind. And that would have been the same with Tottenham. If they would have got back into it, Chelsea, when they're having a good spell, and Lloris makes, not only does he save it, but he pushes it away from the goal in the danger area. He doesn't just palm it. He has a strong right hand that pushes it out the danger area, which allows his defenders to clear his lines. So it's quite magnificent, and it's vital for goalkeepers, not just to make loads of saves, but make the big saves. David De Gea did it for Manchester United against West Ham when it was 0-0 and they have a run, just to come up with them big saves, and I think he did it very well. It's another player that signed a long-term contract with Tottenham, as well as Harry Kane and Dier, on and on and on. So they've got a really bright future because they've got a top goalkeeper there.
All right, so Spurs jumps into third place. They're only 7 points out behind Chelsea now. The youth of Spurs, now we're hearing everybody talk about title contenders. Are they serious title contenders?
Yeah, they'd be in the mix. I don't think they'll win it. I still think their vulnerability is shown when they have one or two players. It's like Harry Kane gets injured. Who's going to score the goals at the back if they have a long-term injury? They haven't got a replacement that comes in because they tie a lot of games rather than winning games. So they'll be in the hunt. I don't think they'll win it. I don't think they've got enough if the squad is deep enough to go all the way and scoring goals from different areas. So I think they'll be in there. They'll have a say. They qualify for the Champions League, but I don't think they'll win the title.
Great match today. 2-0 winners today, Spurs over Chelsea. Talking to Warren Barton of Fox, was also a defender in the Premier League with Newcastle, which many of you will know. Let's go back to Christian Eriksen, a Danish midfielder and playmaker. I love watching this guy. He doesn't seem like he breaks a sweat, Warren.
No, he's got a grace about his presence. You know, he's a graceful player, picks the balls up in, in good areas. I watched him when he was at Ajax coming through as a young player, learning his trade. He's comfortable with his set pieces. He's a talented player. I always think a top-class player looks like they've got time on the ball, and he does that. He's even in tight areas and tight space. He's always thinking ahead of the game, when's the next pass, when's the next movement. And he'll do the other side of the game. He will work and help in that midfield area when he needs to. But going forward, I mean, his service today was quite outstanding. And they've worked on that. You know, if he gets it, go and pin yourself against Aspilicueta and try your luck against them rather than Cahill, who's a more natural defender. So when he got on the ball, I thought he grew into the game. As the game got opened up a little bit more and more, he started developing the game and really running the show. And again, another young player that looks happy at the club and going forward. And I must say, with the Spurs fans, they was the noise and the atmosphere.
Wow.
So, I mean, I'm 5,000 miles away. was quite outstanding.
Yeah, exactly. You're watching it on TV and you're going, look at these images and listen to this acoustic coming out of that stadium. Just spectacular, like you said, in the open. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Chelsea. I don't know if you're a believer in this because you're one of the hardest working men in the soccer business. You do a tremendous amount of coaching, very successful at it, as well as analyzing games on TV for Fox. Do you believe in a thing called a good loss? And is this a good loss for Chelsea?
Yeah, I do. I do, and I understand exactly, Glenn, where you're coming from. No one likes to lose, so don't all the callers start getting on Twitter. There's never a good loss, but there's sometimes a one like, little reality check that halfway through the season. Now, if this started coming towards the end of the season, then people might start panicking and change. But they've been on a magnificent run, 13 games winning. So let's put that in the open first and foremost. They've gone to a difficult stadium. Their biggest rivals in London, you know, forget about Arsenal and West Ham. Chelsea and Spurs despise each other with a passion, the clubs and the fans and everything else that goes with it. So they've gone into that environment and got beat. And quite honestly, fair and square. And they did have chances. They had one or two opportunities, but they got beat on the better thing. Now they can bounce back, regroup, refocus, got the FA Cup. So one or two of the players will have a rest at the weekend, and then they can go again. Conte's challenge will be saying to the players on, Thursday morning, let's go another 13 games. Let's go and win it. Let's go 13 games. And the people like Costa John Terry that's around and Cahill and, you know, all these players that have won titles would say, let's go again. Let's make it 13. You know, we've gone into that environment. Okay, we didn't perform. It's been a hectic period for us. We haven't got Champions League. We haven't got Europe. Let's go on another good run and put this to bed early if we can do. And I think Conte's used to winning. You know, there's no coincidence that he goes into Chelsea and they start winning games because he's been doing it for 5 years at Juventus. So they've got that mindset and he's got that mindset about winning games and bouncing back.
How about in your career? Was there a good loss that sticks out to you?
I had too many, Glenn, to be honest with you. But no, there's one or two. You know, we had one early on in my Newcastle when we was flying high and everything was going well at Manchester City. Then we bounced back and went again. But there's never a good time to actually lose a game. But there's sometimes a little reality check. And, you know, you go to a place like Man City, lose a game, you think, okay, right. And then you go on 5, 6, 7 games again and get a result. So, yeah, there were certain times that we had a wake-up call and go back again. And even at my time at Wimbledon, you know, we finished 7th, 6th and 8th in the league. There was times when we thought, oh, this is easy. And we'd go to, say, Southampton away from home and get beat at the old deal from Matthew Letizia, and then that was a wake-up call for us, and we'd go back on another run. So, there's times that you need that as a player. You need that edge again to start, right, let's get in Monday morning, get ourselves ready again, and let's start focused for the next game.
It's grounding, right?
Yeah, obviously, yeah. As I said, unless you're the Invincibles that win every game, which is I don't think it's ever going to happen in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. You know, that's even with Barcelona, when they have certain results, you know, they get beat. Okay, right, let's see where we are. Messi, let's go again. And Iniesta, them type of players, and they go on another marvellous run. And it's what gives you that hunger and that determination to keep going.
He's Warren Barton joining us here. Let's go back to Antonio Conte, and you did mention all his great success at Juventus, but with the new managers coming in the league, Mourinho at Manchester United, Pep Guardiola at City, Conte, I mean, after switching to this three-back system, I mean, this guy is the standard bearer right now.
Yeah, everyone was talking about Pep and Mourinho this season and Conte. He's probably delighted just to go in there. But as I said, he's a winner. And Chelsea's been a winner. You know, last season was a terrible time because of maybe the modern-day players and Mourinho didn't get on. Maybe their ages have passed apart where Mourinho still expected them to be like Drogba and Lampard and Terry. And you know, they're not. You know, Hazard is not going to be the same sort of mentality as a Frank Lampard. So Mourinho found it hard to adjust with the modern day player. Conte's gone in there at the right time. Obviously, everybody see him in the Euros, how he was with his team, making an Italian team that are nowhere near what they used to be in days gone by, but get them to a good level and make them competitive and good to watch. And he's gone in there about his business, said to him at the beginning, OK, let's see what you've got. That ain't working. You're going to go my way. And I think they bought into it. And obviously, the success has been there. But it will be a test for him. And I said this many weeks ago with Conte, when it has been going well, when a couple of decisions, because he's very volatile. You know, and we all love that about him on the touchline, kicking balls, running on the field, you know, screaming and shouting. That's part of the passion that we want. And I played against him, and he was like that on the field when he was at Juve. So we want to see that. But when he starts getting a bad call, when he starts maybe getting a player sent off, or the FA can maybe want an inquiry with him, then you'll see how it is. Because the Premier League, and I keep going on about this, Glenn, and people say La Liga and Bundesliga, the Premier League is relentless, not only on the field, but off the field, media, the Football Association, referees. The referee had a good game today. I'm going to say they don't help you out sometimes, but the referee at Stamford Bridge, at White Hart Lane, had a good game today. So it'll be times like that when we see, but they're still 5 points clear in the league, and they still be comfortable that they can retain it. But what I love about the EPL and the Premier League, it asks the top people questions who have been used to having their way for so long. You've seen Pep now get a bit irritated with certain journalists and certain comments and certain decisions. And that's what it does to you. It just tests you every single day, every 24/7. But that's why we love it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Great comments there on Antonio Conte as well. Let me just switch gears to Bob Bradley and the whole Swansea thing and just get your thoughts on Bradley's real short stint there at Swansea and what you thought of the situation.
Yeah, I feel for Bob. And first of all, I'm embarrassed by some of the media, how they were saying about PKs and on the road. Yeah. We've had Italian coaches, French coaches, Spanish coaches get lost in translation. So don't make humour of someone's interpretation about how they play a game or how someone takes a decision. Bob obviously lost his job because the results wasn't there. And they conceded too many goals. What I was surprised with Bob, and speaking to Lexi and Eric and Brad Friedel, obviously, that have worked with him and know him, that he didn't get that organised early. I know people saying, well, he didn't have the players, but the defensive side of a game is one of the easiest things to do as a coach. You just make it uncomfortable and ugly for the opposition as best you can. Get them organised, work with them. I think he was trying to please too many people by this attractive football at Swansea. Swansea at the moment just want results. That's why Crystal Palace have gone and got Sam Allardyce. It's just about results. Because Crystal Palace want to play good football. I played against them when they had Steve Cooper, and they always played attractive football. But at the moment, it's about staying in the Premier League. And Bob went in there maybe trying to please too many people rather than, I think he'd sit at home with a coffee in his hand or maybe a bit stronger. I think, I should have really gone my way there. I should have really gone defensive, shored it up, and got a 0-0, a 1-1, grinded out three or four results, made them hard to play against because they wasn't. They was open, they was vulnerable, they wanted to play attractive football, and they're just not good enough to do that at the moment. And unfortunately for him, the consequences, you know, 80-odd days is far, far too quick for someone to lose their job. But that's the business you're in, because if they do go to February, March, and it's too late, they're out of the Premier League. At the moment, they're in touching distance of that bottom seven, actually, not the bottom three. They, you know, they can, a couple of results and you can get out of that bottom three. But I feel for him. He bounced back. You know, apparently, he's already talking to the Norwegian national team to go in there. But I just think if he sits back and realises that, you know what, I maybe should have gone that way. But hey, he did it his own way and obviously faced the consequences.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. That's what shocked me as well, because that's what his reputation was built on, was being a guy that was able to organise teams, make them difficult to break down, based on his time with the national team and in Major League Soccer as well. I mean, you know, early years with Chicago.
You've been around the MLS, and when Bob had his teams here, and with the national team, and with it, they was organised. They had an identity. They was hard to play against, played some football when they needed to, but more importantly, they was hard to play against. I didn't see Swansea have an identity. Not even though they was playing great football and getting beat. They was just lost in, it got maybe a bit lost in pushing forward, I was going to say lost in translation there, but pushing forward and just being too exposed, really, and too vulnerable to play against.
I agree with you 100% in what you said with the guys in studio as well. Well, listen, Warren, I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much. I'm glad you had a great holiday. And again, thank you for coming on tonight and providing all this great insight.
Thanks, Glenn. You're the best in the business.
I don't know about that, but but I'll take that from you. That one's on record. All right, Warren. Yeah. Thanks so much. All right, that's Warren Barton, Fox analyst. This guy, he comes on, straight shooter. There's never any hesitation in his answer. And here's the other thing I love about him. When you do an interview with Warren Barton, you're doing an interview with him. It's not he's speaking at you. And that's what makes it a good interview. So, as always, Warren Barton providing some great insight there on the Premier League. Good to get it from a guy who's been there. A moment here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John Daspit and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-4878. That's 713-322-HURT. Now, whether your accident is car, boat, motorcycle, industrial, construction, plant, refinery, you drive an 18-wheeler, the Daspit Law Firm is going to assure you that they'll treat your case as if it's their own. It's DaspitLaw.com. The Daspit Law Firm will work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. They will fight for your right for compensation. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-4878.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. A quick word here for the Daspit Law Firm. Now, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. Whether your accident is car, boat, motorcycle, industrial, construction, plant, refinery, or you drive an 18-wheeler, the Daspit Law Firm will assure you that they will treat your case as if it's their own. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-4878. With that, we go across the pond. We go to Manchester, England, and right now, a great friend of the show, the talented writer of ESPN FC, covers the Mexican League. He's Tom Marshall. Tom, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Hi, Glenn. Happy New Year. Thanks for the invite.
I got to think, it's great to be home, huh? You seeing family and friends in Manchester?
Yeah, it's cold. It's definitely a bit colder than Guadalajara, but yeah, great to come back. And obviously, you know, I always try and go to as many games as I can I'm back visiting family over here in Manchester.
Have you seen any games since you've been home?
Yeah, I've been to Old Trafford. I go to watch the Third Division Rochdale, I've been to West Brom. I even made a trip to Portugal to go and watch Benfica and a team called Belenenses. So, yeah, keeping busy, Glenn, even though it's supposed to be a vacation.
Oh, buddy, I love it. This is why you follow your passion in life, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you can't ask for a better job than writing or talking about soccer.
All right, so Tom, before we get into today's big Spurs result over Chelsea, I want to ask you this question because of your background, and I've always found it very unique that you are residing in Mexico. Not that it's totally unique, but it is pretty cool from a footballing perspective. So when you see the Premier League and then you compare it to watching all year long Liga MX and covering it, you know, what are the striking differences between the two leagues?
I think it's just, the speed and the physicality of the Premier League. I think, you know, you watch the Mexican League and it is a lot slower. And the players are just generally, you know, smaller. And you look at the Premier League these days, especially kind of the mid-table and lower league teams, and, you know, you notice the players are a lot of them are absolutely massive. I mean, that's the way, kind of, if technically they're a bit deficient as a squad or as a team, they make up for that from physicality, from, you know, scoring goals more from set pieces and stuff. Whereas in Mexico, the massive emphasis is on technical ability, skill on the ball, you know, taking it past an opponent. So, you know, I think Mexico's at it's way at the other end of the scale in terms of they don't really put a lot of emphasis on kind of physicality and stuff like that. Although Juan Carlos Osorio, I think, with the Mexico national team, I think he does prioritize that in terms of picking his teams against certain opposition.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the areas that maybe if we're comparing the United States national team and Mexico, that we have seen Mexico focus on in the past years, and that is trying to narrow that physical gap, because I think they've done that with the national team.
Yeah, I mean, Osorio is definitely, you know, I think it's a massive priority for him. I think he's looked back at Mexico historically, and, you know, he Osorio just absolutely loves watching games from Europe, and, you know, he really studies them, and he knows that, I think he calls set pieces the kind of fifth element of the game. Obviously, you know, you've got, you know, you're in possession, you lose possession, and the two transitions from one to the other. But then the fifth kind of block, and it's in his book, actually, it's Juan Carlos Osorio's book's really, really interesting. And the fifth element to the game is set pieces. And he stresses you really have to, you know, you have to look after that side as well, because, you know, these days in certain tournaments, you know, what, 20, 30, up to 40% of goals can be scored from set pieces. So you can play the most beautiful football you want, but at the end of the day, the other team gets a free kick and they can kill you.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. The fifth element, it sounds like a movie, doesn't it? You know, I had the opportunity when he was a coach in New York in MLS to sit down with him. I always found him to be a really nice gentleman, incredibly passionate, would talk forever about the game, which I think is a positive. But I remember sitting in a small room at Giants Stadium and, you know, 45 minutes basically just listening to Juan Carlos Osorio just talking about his thoughts on the game and MLS at the time and all these other things. So I think he's a very interesting character. He's Tom Marshall. We got him on the phone here via Manchester, England right now, one of the hottest soccer cities, obviously, in the world. So Dele Alli is just on a goal-scoring tear. I think he's got 7 in the last 4. Spurs get a 2-0 win over Chelsea today. I know you watched the game. Is this kid the future of England now?
I mean, we've heard it very often, you know, is he the future? But he's got absolutely everything. I mean, 20 years old. And, you know, you look at it from a kind of outside perspective, and can you imagine an American kid? I mean, I know you've got Pulisic over there, but, you know, 20 years old, impacting Premier League games at the very top of the table like he has done, and taking it all in his stride, and the way he seems to be able to do absolutely everything, and the way he seems to have a great manager with in Pochettino to kind of guide him. Yeah, I mean, it's exciting for England. I think that England in general not really had many of those, you know, genuinely technically really gifted players. And when England has produced them, we haven't known really how to use them. Like, you know, even, you know, Paul Scholes is probably the best recent example. Is like how he wasn't the absolute, you know, focal point of the England team for, you know, 10 years is beyond me. You know, it's difficult to explain, but Dele Alli, I think, you know, it's a team, potentially for the national team, you can build a team around him, especially in the attacking sense.
Well, the Neville brother today on the broadcast on NBC, you know, was putting him in the category and saying that he could have a career. He could, like Paul Scholes and Frank Lampard.
Yeah, there's no reason why not. You know, I think that it's really, I think he's at the right club. I think it's important that he doesn't kind of make that big move. I'm sure the likes of Real Madrid, Barcelona will be keeping tabs on him, and obviously they've got the resources to potentially, you know, get him away from Tottenham. We know the Tottenham chairman, he finds it a bit difficult sometimes to resist when there are massive money offers for his players. So I think he's in the right place, Dele Alli, right now. And yeah, I mean, it's exciting. I mean, I think every nation would love to have a player of his ability, and it's just, I don't know, more than anything, Glenn, it's like he's just really good to watch. He's unpredictable, and you don't know what he's going to do next.
You know what, Tom, that I really find very interesting about him, and I think is a real plus. The kid seems really grounded. Whenever you hear him in an interview, you're kind of going, well, this is a 20-year-old? You know, I didn't talk like this at 20 years of age and didn't seem as mature as this guy. And I think you mentioned Pochettino, but I just think he's obviously got a great support system around him, that he is grounded. And I mean, I just think with a young player – that does go so far to have the right adult and experienced elements around you.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, and I think the Pochettino thing as well. Obviously, we've mentioned it, but you know, I think he's, you know, I mean, the reputation he's already gained here in England, and obviously, you know, he comes from that Bielsa school. I think they're playing the right football. I think that if you translate almost what Tottenham are doing there with Pochettino and the high pressing and the, you know, the intensity that they've got, the young players, and you could see potentially, I mean, looking on the kind of positive of the future of the England national team, but potentially you could see that could be kind of overlaid into what England do going forward. But obviously, yeah, obviously, I think Dele Alli, you know, Harry Kane, you see that, you know, Harry Winks coming on there, Christian Eriksen, all young players who seem to have just absolutely blossomed under Pochettino, and I don't think that's any kind of coincidence. I think that Pochettino is, you know, one of the very best managers in the world right now, and you know, he's only really getting started in terms of his managerial career.
Tom Marshall joining us, ESPN FC. You can get his readings over there at ESPNFC.us. Writes some great articles, tremendous coverage of the Mexican League. And as you know here, Tom is multi-versatile here talking about the Premier League. But we're going to switch it over to Liga MX now. Watching that Club America Tigres final,
yeah.
I felt that emotional outburst and the loss of emotional control was incredibly costly on this night for Club America.
Yeah, I think America, obviously it's been an emotional year for him because last year was the centennial year. You know, everything was geared up towards that last game. And I think in the end, they suffered because of it. They couldn't keep the emotions under control. They were so desperate to win. And I thought, you know, I don't know, it's just been a weird, very just strange last few months for America. I mean, to get rid of Nacho Ambriz halfway through the season, bring in La Volpe, and then to see Ricardo La Volpe side, who's La Volpe is known for attacking football, flowing football, and to see like this kind of new look La Volpe come in and almost be like counter attacking and more defensive, it was just very strange. And I think that, you know, it left a sour taste the end of the final, the way that it all kind of kicked off with a bit of fighting over there in just before extra time, and then obviously the fact that, I mean, all that would have been forgotten if America would have won, but obviously, they couldn't quite manage it. And Tigres, you know, you got to say, Tuca Ferretti, that was his 1,000th game in the Liga MX. You know, and all that time he's been in charge, he's not been fired once, and he's not been out of work once. So he's been consistently 1,000 games. It's absolutely incredible when you put it in kind of those terms, especially in a league like the Mexican League, where sometimes you've got a run of 5-10 bad results, and you'll get fired straight away. I mean, the owners, that's how they operate.
Yeah, you're pointing out some remarkable statistics here. And Ferretti, the other thing that's amazing about him, he's always been so gracious and thankful to the country of Mexico and the Liga MX for all the opportunity he has gotten, including, remember when he went in on an interim basis coaching Mexico, didn't want to be paid for it, and basically said, this is sort of my reciprocation of a thank you back to Mexico.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think he's going to go down as kind of a legendary figure in the Mexican game. But I think now for Ferretti, the challenge is on. I mean, Tigres have put a lot of money in. I mean, players like André Pierre Gignac, you know, Ismael Sosa came for over, around $10 million. They signed Jürgen Damm for around the same amount. Javier Aquino's there. The player like Guido Pizarro, he's just breaking into the Argentina squad. So the club have put a really good squad together there. And I think the challenge now for Ferretti is to, you know, make this. I mean, it's obviously difficult in a league that has playoffs and that has two seasons every year. But to kind of make this a mini period of domination for Tigres, because they've got the manager in place, the players are in place, the fan base is in place. I mean, the Tigres fans are incredible. 40,000 every single week. It doesn't matter who they're playing. They fill up that stadium. And I think that, you know, the challenge there for Ferretti, he's already achieved so much, but moving forward now, the next couple of years, I think he's got a contract for until 2020, is to now, you know, really win a few titles and make this a kind of golden period for Tigres. And I mean, potentially, I mean, we're talking Mexico of the Big Four, Cruz Azul, Pumas, Chivas in America. And I think potentially what Tigres should be looking to do is to become that number five.
Tom Marshall joining us here, ESPN FC. He is a writer, covers the Mexican League. Let's talk about the city of Monterrey, Mexico, because where we are geographically here in Houston, I know, you know, on weekends when Tigres and Rayados are playing, that people are driving back to Mexico. They're flying back down there to watch games. And I do believe there needs to be some sort of link here between Monterrey and the passion for soccer there and the Houston Dynamo, ultimately, in Major League Soccer. Now, the Dynamo have acquired on loan Albert Elis from Monterrey. Do you know much about him? I know he's only played or appeared four times, and he's only 20 years of age. Do you know much about him?
Yeah, he's. I've watched him play for Honduras youth teams, especially in the Olympics. I know that he's been linked with was it Everton a little while ago. But yeah, a big fan of him. I don't think he's technically the best in the world, but in terms of raw pace, in terms of trickery, getting past the player, he's very good. I think he took a while. Well, he didn't really adapt in the short time he was at Monterrey when he signed, I think, just after the last Olympics. He didn't adapt. I mean, he's very young. He's just coming up from Honduras. So obviously it's difficult. But I think in terms of raw talent, I think potentially, you know, Dynamo have got a real player for next season. I think that obviously, you know, the fact that he's going to have a good pre-season as well with the team is a massive boost, because he kind of joined Monterrey and then he was kind of thrown in there straight away. And I thought that was a little bit unfair, you know, considering his age more than anything.
Well, Tom, listen, as always, we thank you so much. We want to get you back on here to start previewing the next season in the Mexican League, if we can do that. We always know where to find you. You know, we'll track you down wherever you are, Tom. So, you know, don't think you can hide over there in Manchester.
No escape. No, I'm only joking. No, thanks a lot for the invite. Always enjoy the chats. And, yeah, like I said, Happy New Year to you and all the listeners.
Right back at you, Tom. It's Tom Marshall, ESPNFC.com. That's where you can get all his writings, covers the Mexican League. He's one of the best in the business. Get over there, look at all the things he's writing about when it comes to Liga MX. Tom, thank you so much, and have a great rest of your holiday.
Thanks, Lynn.
All right, that's Tom Marshall. Quick word here for the Gorgeous Gale. Now, if you want an Irish pub with that Irish feel, then the Gorgeous Gale is the place for you. Soccer fans, get over to the Gorgeous Gale. It's 5555 Morningside Drive. Catch all the best soccer and football matches. Stop in for a pint and a bite. They've got a tremendous whiskey offering, open feel, lots of monitors, an outdoor patio. The Gorgeous Gale is the place to be. TheGorgeousGale.com, an official Soccer Matters pub. Take a break here. It's the best in soccer talk. We'll take a 7-Up break.
This is DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver for the Houston Texans, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, tonight we're going to wrap it up in style. Before we get to our next guest, a quick word here about my friends at Liberty Kitchen. Now, they know how to serve up lunch, supper, and brunch better than most. Think of it as modern American comfort food. Mac and cheese, chicken fried steaks, mom's spaghetti chowder. It's farm stand crisp food that Liberty Kitchen stamps its claim on and owns. It's big flavor, served at a neighborhood social. Liberty Kitchen staples, deviled eggs topped with fried oysters or Dixie fried chicken, Creole gumbo, oysters on the half shell, cowboy surfers, po' boys, the burger bowl, chops, steaks, ribs, fish, it rounds out the menu. Weekday specials include signature cocktails and cold beer on tap. Now you understand why Liberty Kitchen is a regular stop. Liberty Kitchen, lunch, supper, and brunch, stop by all the differing locations, the Heights, River Oaks, Rice Village, Garden Oaks, and now open at the Treehouse in Memorial City. Okay, with that, we go to one of the recent Dynamo acquisitions. He is a defender coming from the Seattle Sounders here to Houston, picked up in the 2016 MLS reentry draft. It is Dylan Remick. Dylan, thank you very much for taking the time to come on the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, when you get the news that you've been selected by the Dynamo, and you know, here you are, you just won an MLS Cup, and you're up in Seattle, and the city's going absolutely nuts. Just kind of talk about the emotions that go through when you are picked up by another team, especially after what's just happened in Seattle.
It was a whirlwind of emotions that week. That's for certain. It was a great time after winning the MLS Cup, but I knew that my future was going to be on another team at the end of the year, and I was just hoping I was going to get a fresh start with a new team, and I was ecstatic. I saw that Houston picked me for entry draft. As soon as that happened, I just got ready to go for next year.
Did you have a sense that you were going to get picked up in the re-entry draft, and that's what it seems like to me?
I didn't have a 100% certainty sense. No, anytime you get a draft, anything can happen. So I was hopeful that somebody would give me that chance to play for their team. When Houston came calling, I was 100% on board and ready to go.
New Dynamo defender Dylan Remick joining us here on ESPN 97.5 Soccer Matters. You've played as a center back at Brown in the college game. How difficult was the transition to the left back position? Because not every central defender can do that. And by the way, you are predominantly left-footed, which is also a good thing as a left back.
Yeah, that definitely helped a bit. At Brown, my first coach, Mike, second coach, Pat Lawson, both helped me to learn and understand how to play left back. And, you know, that really helped teach me that game and how to be successful in that position. And when I got to Seattle, the coaches and teammates were great at helping, you know, advance my career and helping me learn everything I needed to learn to be a competitive player in this league at the left back position.
So describe the way you play the left back position for Dynamo fans, because I always think it's interesting to ask a player how they describe their own game.
That's a good question. For me, being a defender, you know, first and foremost, you have to be a good defender, both team positionally and a good 1-2-1 lockdown defender. So I like to think that I start my game there by being a solid defender. And then I like to get up and down the field. I think I can run for a little bit. So, you know, I try and get to the attack as much as possible. I like to be a two-way outside back as much as possible, help both the attack. And whenever I can get touches on the ball and help the team, I'm happy.
Dylan, any players in the World Game or in MLS that you kind of enjoy watching play the left back position? You might watch to pick up some ideas from.
Yeah, I really like watching Marcelo play left back. I personally think he's one of the best left backs to be. He's just really creative at that position, both defensively and offensively. Some of the things he does, very few left backs can do. But just watching him be creative and watching how he sees the game from that position intrigues me and helps me sort of see the game differently the next time I take the pitch.
He's new Dynamo defender Dylan Remick joining us. Dylan, do me one favor. If you can speak up just a little bit more, it might be helpful to us because you got a lot of really good things to say here, and we're appreciating that. Boy, how difficult is it as a left back to really just be timely with when you join in the attack and when you join in it with 100% conviction, when you're joining in the attack just to provide support from behind? There's so many decisions you have to make in helping sort of control that wide area of the field.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to go with the personnel and players around you. So that's why I'm really excited with all the new signings and the current Dynamo players, just getting to know how everybody plays and trying to play off them and sort of building that chemistry in preseason. Because you know, much of how I play is revolved around so many other players, and it's sort of this interwoven, you know, masterpiece, you could say. And so a lot of it is off, you know, the chemistry and you know, sort of recognizing when a teammate is looking for you, and then you make that run and the ball is played. So it's a lot of timing and chemistry with the players, and that's something that I'm very much looking forward to figuring out and learning this preseason.
Dylan, you might laugh at this, but in your write-up and bio at MLSsoccer.com, they say the incendiary left back. So am I to assume that you're just a very fiery guy, or you know, you're not gonna blow up in a bunch of flames in front of us, are you?
I don't think so. I hope not.
No, I don't think you will.
Incendiary is a good adjective, though.
Yeah, like it that. Is. It is. It's some good writing, I got to admit. But that is kind of a neat word, because the Dynamo do need a bit of fire. The Dynamo do need, I don't think without any question, for people who've watched them the last couple of years, some character and some edge. And I think the fans are feeling that they're going to get some edge with you. They're going to get some edge with Machado. And a number of the new signings that, you know, will make this a team that has a little bit of an indigenous quality and maybe territorial feel to it that is not going to back down from anybody.
No, I agree. I think everybody coming into this preseason is ready to go. I think there's a great opportunity for us this year. All the guys who have been on the team in the past and the new guys, I think we're ready to go, and I'm really excited to get into preseason and meet everybody and just start working.
How about the city?
Great things this year.
How about the city of Houston? Because it's a very different place than Seattle. You know, now all of a sudden you're going to be playing games in 90 degree plus heat. The Pacific Northwest is obviously very different than Houston, although Houston has amazing potential as a soccer city. Well, it is a great soccer city. I think the potential comes in connecting that with the Houston Dynamo. So kind of your thoughts on Houston and the move from the Pacific Northwest to sort of the third coast down here.
Oh, I'm ready to go. I've heard great things about Houston ever since I got picked up. I've been asking people. Everyone says Houston's an unbelievable city. It's got a great soccer fan base. I know personally that the soccer fan base is amazing. Every time we play there, it's phenomenal. I'm excited to sort of learn more about Houston when I come down. I'm ready to go. I'm excited. This interview is getting long.
Well, that's good. I'm here to serve. You know that, Dylan. All right, last one before I'm here to serve. The last one before I let you go, and we really do appreciate you coming on, and we're looking forward to seeing you down here in Houston. A couple of words on Wilmer Cabrera and his coaching style and what you know about Wilmer.
So I don't know a whole lot yet. I'm excited to see what he has planned for us this year. I do have a friend who played at Chivas with him. He said he was a great coach, he's a great tactician. I'm just gonna be ready for preseason. Whatever he has planned, I'll jump on board and do it to the best of my ability to help this team.
Well, Dylan, listen, thank you very much. We do appreciate hearing from you, and this is going to get the fan base, I think, excited, and they're looking forward to seeing you down here in Houston. And until then, thank you very much for coming on the program tonight.
No, thank you very much for having me. I'm excited.
All right. That's Dylan Remick, new Dynamo left back. We appreciate him coming on tonight. That winds it up here for Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Thanks to all the guests, including Tom Marshall, Dylan Remick, Warren Barton of Fox. We appreciate all of them coming on the show here tonight. And until Friday, don't forget, we're turning it right around here. Another show this Friday, and we'll have a bunch of interviews with some more of the new players here on the Dynamo. Until then, remember, soccer matters.
Listening to ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.